Liberty University's Graduate Center for Research and Evaluation presents An Apologetic for Life, an intriguing look at the resurrection of Christ. Our host is Dr. Gary Sipsey, the director of the GCRE. His guest, Liberty University's distinguished research professor of philosophy and theology, noted author, and authority on the resurrection, Dr. Gary Habermas. The Graduate Center for Research and Evaluation exists to promote, support, and strengthen all university research activity, particularly at the graduate level. And now, here's Gary with our guest.
We want to welcome Dr. Habermas, who is the distinguished research professor here at Liberty University and the chair of the Department of Philosophy and Theology. And it's a great privilege to have you here and to talk to you a little bit about some of the research that you're doing at Liberty. And can you give us a little bit of an idea of what you've been up to and what you're doing?
All the courses that I are in blocks. I teach 1 week modulars. All my courses are grad or doctoral. The rest of the time, I research and write and publish. Oh, I should also say I do a lot of traveling and speaking. I teach at other schools. I've got, I think, 3 or 4 courses this summer at other schools. So I'm on the road a lot, writing a lot, reading a lot, wherever I can.
Well, Dr. Habermas and I have been associated for a long time, and he used to be a professor of mine, and I consider him one of my most influential mentors. My previous training began with philosophy and then added psychology into it. And we have a lot of overlapping interests in both philosophy and psychology. We teach a doctoral course on philosophy of religion in the helping professions, which we sometimes call a philosophy of psychology type of course. But it's a nice blend between the two disciplines. And one of the reasons that we wanted to have Dr. Habermas in is to talk about some of the research that he's doing now in terms of some of the things that he's writing, some of the things that he's speaking on. But also we're interested in how some of those areas of research may be integrated into the helping professions, and that some of our doctoral students in professional counseling and pastoral counseling may begin to research some of the practical applications in these areas in terms of how they influence people and how they change their lives. And actually, we were having a little conversation before we came in here just on that very topic. Can you give us a little bit of an idea in philosophy and apologetics right now as far as your interest in some of the things that you're really working on?
Well, if someone of a sort is doing this invitation or this interview, they'd be saying, no, Habermas doesn't have areas. He has area. I'm known for most of my research on the death and resurrection of Jesus. I sometimes tell people I'm a one-track researcher. 15 of my 30 books are on the resurrection. So I'm always involved in that sort of topic. Other ones I work on, the topic of doubt, especially factual, emotional, and volitional aspects, which right away, having said that, I'm interested generally. In fact, this area is kind of, I don't want to say taking over my life, but I'm just really, really interested in kind of if it's true, and I've spent virtually all my life on that, so I kind of think, okay, it is. Now what does it mean? All right, the next area I think about is how can this be applied to everyday life? And now I'm moving over to some of the affective type categories and asking, how should we feel about this? How can we change our thinking, our acting, and our feeling? Now we're human, and we're never going to get this perfectly right. We're going to have ups and downs, and even whether adrenaline was pumped into us last night is going to affect how we feel today. I mean, knowing all that, knowing that we don't have a utopia, question is, can we think well? Can we translate that to action well? And what's the response in our feelings? I think that question of if it's true, then how should it impact our life is an extremely interesting and helpful area to further Christian commitment.
So one of the things that you've done is really, if you break your career down, is the first half or first three quarters of that has been devoted to researching and establishing the veracity of the Christian faith, and particularly the resurrection being the chief historical and theological claim in Scripture. In other words, if you don't have that, then you don't have much.
Right. I often tell my students that if we're sure of the gospel, and in the New Testament, I would define the factual basis for the gospel at least being the deity, death, and resurrection of Jesus. If we're sure of that, we could be wrong or have different interpretations of a lot of other things. I mean, just look at the evangelical churches out here. There are different creeds, and where do we stand on sovereignty, free will? Where do we stand on the sign gifts? Where do we stand on what kind of church services we have and high church, low church? We know there's a lot of variety in the Christian faith, but I guess what I'm saying is if the center is true, and I would define the center of the center as the deity, death, and resurrection of Jesus, his Father's God, the most integral, fundamental type Christian worldview. If that's true, then, I mean, that's a home run to start with. You're starting with a foundation on which you can build. And then we launch out to areas like, why do I do things I don't want to do? How can I integrate this better with my life? And should my feelings now do a little bit of catching up? In other words, I guess if it's true, it should translate to a holistic Christian walk. And that's really what I'm interested in.
So the first part of your research has focused largely on establishing that veracity. I mean, in other words, not just from obviously we believe that the scriptures claim this, but going even beyond that, asking from what philosophers or apologists call evidential reasons for believing that support the faith, that you don't just have faith that this fact occurred, but you have faith because of this fact. That Christ rose from the dead. I think that's one of the things that you've tried to establish. But then the second part has been on how does this then apply to our lives? How can if one really believes in the resurrection, one really believes in heaven, one really believes in life after death, what is the cognitive, the emotional, the behavioral, the relational impact of that belief on our lives?
Exactly.
And a related question is, how is that best communicated to people? In other words, you can give sometimes you give people very strong evidential reasons for believing the resurrection and evidential reasons for believing Christianity, but they seem not to be persuaded much. That's an interesting question as to why are people who can't even give good evidential counter responses, why is it that they refuse to believe things like that?
Yeah.
But so I would like, if we can, is to first spend some time talking about especially the resurrection and how you often present that to folks, say at different levels, from the more academically minded to those who may not be. You want to package it in a way that can influence people who are not highly, again, academic in their orientation. That's one. And then the other one is, I know another very important topic to you that you spend a fair amount of time thinking about and talking about is the near-death experiences. Some of them are evidential and some of them are not, but the evidential ones are very interesting. And then finally, what are some areas that you think need more research? And not just research from the philosophical perspective and the apologetical perspective, but also the psychological, emotional, spiritual perspective. How do we and can we study its impact on people's lives? We'd like to tap into some of those things.
Yeah, I think they're key. I mean, this week, I think I've gotten two email questions with people saying things like this. Well, if it's true, I mean, if it's really, really true, like you guys say it is, how come people just don't hear it and fall on their knees? And I'm thinking, because life is so much more complicated than having 52 reasons for something.
Mm-hmm.
Your actions and your feelings are caught up in this. Maybe you're convinced, but you don't want to change right now. Maybe you're convinced, but you don't know how it translates to real life. Maybe you're convinced, but you don't know how to build a bridge between what's true and what goes on afterwards. Mm-hmm. So I think if we move into those areas, we'll be, A, assisting Christians greatly to integrate their experience and fire them up for more commitment, but B, I think we're doing a type of extended apologetics because we're saying, hey, this is a whole life transformation. I'm not just trying to get your brain here. I want to get everything you've got because I think that's what the New Testament calls a person to.
So it's more than just intellectual.
Oh, absolutely.
You move from the intellectual into the emotional and the spiritual.
Yeah, but you said it earlier. You hinted at it. I think we start with the basis because if it's not true, sorry, I'm part of the old school that you know, you know, everybody likes to do this, but I'd say, well, I like Paul here on this one. Mm-hmm. But it seems to me Paul says if the gospel is not true, if Christ has not been raised, twice he says our faith is vain. He uses a different Greek word each time, but it basically means empty, fruitless, without basis. And later he says, for a few verses later, where would we be in our ethics? If Jesus had not been raised from the dead, he says, let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die. So I do think whether Jesus has been raised from the dead or not affects whether I eat, drink, and be merry, or I'm about a more civil use of my time and commitment. I think it's all integrally related in the biblical worldview, and I'm not just fishing for your brain.
So, you know, and that's an interesting component. A lot of times Christianity is sold today, if you will, in the context of this faith will bring you the greatest life satisfaction, although I'm not sure that in the New Testament it was actually portrayed that way. It was that this is true first, not that it tends to bring a great deal of life satisfaction, but it's true, and then secondly, it offers the ultimate meaning.
Like, secondly, you should appropriate yourself of the life that this makes available to you. That's
right.
The second, yeah. I think it's true, and I think we'd be doing, like I said, I think we'd be doing Christians and non-Christians a favor if we did some integration of our thinking with our behaving and with our feeling. I think that I think it's irresistible. I think that makes the Christian, you know, for a lot of people, Christianity is not just what's true in facts. They want, because not everybody thinks the same way. Somebody else is a doer. My wife is primarily a doer. She's looking for things that say this can translate to this. Others are feelers, and I just think we have to have a
more
grounded and integrated with nice bridges built from each one. Now, that doesn't mean that somebody else can't start with their feelings, by the way, and back it up.
Right.
But I think they need to know where the bridges are. And when their question is, well, wait a minute, how do those even true? They have to have a bridge over there and know where to get it.
Now, if I know that there's many different evidences, and we were just talking about this earlier, for the Christian faith. I mean, you have philosophical reasons like the cosmological argument, and you've got evidential reasons for the faith, and I know that you think, and I think many others agree, that the resurrection, the historicity of the resurrection, is one of the strongest arguments for the
Absolutely.
Faith. And then arguments that have an emotional impact, but also are evidential, would be something like near-death experiences. And you've talked about this distinction. I think it's a fantastic one. The resurrection is such a powerful argument because it's Christianity specific.
That's correct.
Whereas something like...
I think, okay, compare near-death experiences to resurrection, since they're roughly in the same kind of, we're dealing with afterlife. Two advantages resurrection has on near-death experiences would be, number one, you're asking the question of who Jesus is. So you're asking the worldview-specific question, or the religious-specific question, of whom should I follow? And secondly, near-death experiences don't teach that you have eternal life. They teach that you have some initial life. With J.P. Moreland and I, in a book years ago, Beyond Death, what we call some initial, I mean, from near-death experience, you might say, oh, yeah, we live for hours or days or maybe a few years. But what the resurrection contributes is a person, Jesus, and an eternity. So I think the resurrection is much deeper what it brings to the table. That doesn't mean that other areas like near-death experiences or, let's say, a natural argument from God to the soul, let's say, that doesn't mean that that doesn't bring some aspects to the table that are also evidential. But neither of those gets you to either Jesus or to eternity.
Right.
You might hint, but you know, the resurrection promises eternal life.
So the near-death experiences are not worldview-specific. They probably argue for, like, dualism in general and the existence of the mind and the soul beyond death for at least a short period of time.
Right.
Going to the resurrection, and this is hard for a person who has lived this for much of their career, if not all of their career, as a philosopher. What do you feel like the strongest arguments are for the resurrection, and not just from an intellectual perspective, but also the ones that have had the most that seem to impact people the most when you say people who are not believers or people who are believers but have significant doubts about the factual doubts about this? What do you feel like the most the strongest evidences are for the resurrection?
Well, to me, let me back up. To me, it's not so much, here's the 10 strongest evidences, although I think they're very strong evidences. To me, putting the right methodology in place is at least as important as the evidences. And the methodology I use is what I call a minimal facts argument. Now, most people today that I see, in fact, I go on secular campuses and I begin my lecture like this. You know, some of you are skeptics, and maybe I've heard that looks like half this audience is unbelievers from what they can tell, and they have different ways of telling that. And I'll start with this objection. Some of you are thinking tonight, you want me to believe the man, and the Christian next to you says, yep, the man's in the book, yep. I said, now you get real clever at this point as an unbeliever. I don't believe the book, so therefore I don't believe the man. And you think, whoa, I'm pretty proud of myself. That was a pretty good move. And you leave the Christian with his or her mouth hanging open because they don't know how to get from no book to the man in the book. Well, I think the New Testament, I think there's some good principles for the reliability of the New Testament. But I would like to start with a lower common denominator, what I call the minimal facts method. And I'll say basically this. If the Bible's inspired, and I can use what's in the Bible, Jesus is raised from the dead. But of course, you won't allow that if you're an unbeliever. So if I can believe the Bible's reliable, historically reliable, I can get a resurrection. And you go, oh, you don't believe that either, because you're pretty skeptical. Okay, well, what do you believe? Well, I just believe the Bible is a book of ancient literature. At least has to be set beside Homer and Shakespeare, and it's a classic, right? It's an old book written by old people, a conglomerate of religious experiences. Okay, that's your view. Well, in this book, what do you think are some of the likely historical facts surrounding the death and resurrection of Jesus? And actually, critical scholarship publishes widely on this, non-Christian critical scholarship, and they will grant a list of facts. I'll say, okay, so you'll grant 20 or 30 facts about this neighborhood, the last weekend, and then Christians would say the next 40 days of Jesus' life. Yeah, and I'll say, all right, well, you won't grant inspiration, you won't grant reliability, but I can take your data, I think. My challenge will be to take your data and show you that Jesus is raised from the dead. So if the Bible is inspired, he's raised. If the Bible is not inspired but reliable, Jesus is raised. If neither are true, Jesus is raised from the dead. So you get resurrection no matter what. And for a person, this is the worst it gets. You can get a person who gets kind of a little bit cocky with you here and says, all right, hotshot, I'm not going to grant you any data. None. Zero. Zippo. Fine. I only ask for between 4 and 7 facts, and most people allow 20 to 30, including my 4 to 7.
Now, when you say most people, who are you referring to?
I mean scholars. But when I do this at state university campuses, lay people don't object. The students there who have never studied it don't object. They don't say, but I'll take those 4 to 7. So if the guy who says, I won't give you any, it doesn't take me a terribly long time to get to 4 to 7. So in other words, now I have 4 levels. Inspired, he's raised. Reliable, he's raised. Neither, just an old book of literature, he's raised. Or I'll give you nothing. Well, then I'll argue from there up to the 4 or 7, and my conclusion will still be he's raised. So I think the resurrection is a very versatile fact, and hints from what we've already said.
What are the four facts that you virtually get no dispute over with very liberal. Scholars.
Well, let me give you, I'll use anywhere from 4 to 7. And I say it's arbitrary because nobody only gives me 4 to 7. They'll give me a dozen to 30. And my point is to say, I really appreciate that, but you're not skeptical enough for me. I don't need that many. And that just kind of amuses them that right. I'm doing that. And I will say one more thing before I give this list. I'll say each of these is not allowed for dogma reasons. Each of these is allowed. I mean, ask yourself, what would it take for a skeptic to believe? Each of these is allowed because each is confirmed by several other lines of evidence. Let's say medical, psychological, historical, philosophical. We have good reasons for believing this. So I would use things like this. Jesus died due to the rigors of crucifixion. Maybe surprisingly to some, virtually nobody questions this today, not the scholars who've studied it. You might get a layperson and say, well, how do you know if? But that's not where the scholars go. Jesus died according to the rigors of crucifixion. Secondly, I would say that this is the least accepted fact on my list, but it's still accepted by a majority of scholars. Secondly, the tomb in which he was buried was found empty just a few days later. And if you study the skeptical and the scholarly literatures I have, there are more than 20 reasons, good solid reasons, none of which are, well, it's in the Bible. None of them go like that. But over 20 reasons, taking the Bible as a book of ancient literature, for the empty tomb. Thirdly, and this is as widely accepted as any fact, I'm wording this very, very carefully, the disciples had experiences that they believed were appearances of the risen Jesus. Not disputed, because somehow you have to explain their life change, and that's number four. They were totally changed by this, not temporarily, for good. They left their businesses, they left their land, they left their families. I don't have to prove they died for their faith, although I think I can show that for three of the four major disciples, but all I want to show is they put themselves in harm's way and were willing to die for their faith. That's four. Then I would say two skeptics, Paul the persecutor, James the skeptic, the brother of Jesus, both become believers because, I'm watching my words again, both of them become believers because they thought they had experiences which were appearances of the risen Jesus. That makes six. And seven.
Now let me just ask you this question about that one. Did Paul claim to have seen the risen Jesus, or did was the road, the Damascus experience, the only experience he had, or did he have others?
We talked about other experiences, but he had one appearance.
One appearance.
One appearance, and he tells us this himself. He tells us, for example, 1 Corinthians 9:1, 1 Corinthians 15:8. Now, before the listener says, whoa, you just quoted the Bible to me, and I already told you I don't believe the Bible. No. You have to understand the move I'm making. I did not just cite that verse as authoritative because, A, it's inspired, or authoritative because, B, it's reliable. I cited that verse because scholarship, with one voice, you can hardly pick out a scholar. I mean, an atheistic New Testament scholar. You can hardly find a scholar who says Paul didn't write 1 Corinthians and that he wasn't an eyewitness to these early things. You can't find one. Michael Martin, the famous skeptic who's written books against Christianity, he says the one eyewitness we can be sure of is the Apostle Paul, and that he saw a resurrection appearance. And you go, wait a minute. You don't believe he saw a resurrection appearance? No, what Paul believes he did.
Right.
And so when it's in 1 Corinthians 9:1, in other words, to quote Paul giving these verses would be like to quote Shakespeare giving an account in Hamlet. It's at least his view in a writing that we can establish is from Paul's hand. That's the only way I'm using these texts, not smuggling in reliability or inspiration.
So those are six, right? Paul,
yeah.
Paul would be six and James would be seven?
No, James, I gave four, and then James and Paul are five and six.
Okay.
The last one is a very important one. This is reported very, very early. It didn't take generations. In fact, scholarship right now, you can use skeptical scholarship, the Jesus Seminar, Garrett Ludeman, an atheistic New Testament scholar who doesn't believe the resurrection, John Dominic Crossan doesn't believe the resurrection, not literally. They believe that the teaching of the resurrection goes way back to the beginning. James D.G. Dunn, arguably the most influential theologian today, Larry Hurtado, two of the hottest guys today from British schools, both say that when early Christianity was preached, this is Hurtado, when early Christianity was preached, there never was a time when Jesus was not two things, A, deity, and B, raised from the dead. Well, that's the gospel. That's the center. That's the, you know, and that's
so these
there
claims
the
very were very
beginning.
Early. They
very
were things
early,
that
not developed. Oh, there might be some thinking about it and extrapolation and an application to ministry and life later. But I mean, the core data, right? They're from the beginning.
Now, okay, so now. So you would go, your methodology would be to establish 4 to 7 facts
right.
that basically in the people that you've debated over the years on this have not disputed.
They don't dispute them.
They don't dispute. And these are very critical scholars. So,
yes.
So you get this in
atheist.
Place. And
atheist.
then you, what's your next step? Is it to say, okay, you give me these, so how do you explain these facts independently of a literal resurrection?
Well, I would say these data alone are sufficient. These minimal data alone, besides being minimal, they're able to do two more things. They're able to give me the best refutations for natural theories against the resurrection, and out of these, I have my best evidences for the resurrection.
When we come back, we want to spend some time going through some of the counter arguments to this, and then also application. How does resurrection lead to application in various areas? Can we
Sounds
do that?
Sounds good.
All right.
Sounds great.